Hey there, ho there, you're listening to Super Tool Shed, the only podcast on the internet that knows more than three Wonder Woman villains. I'm Ben of the Sage, I'm joined by Mark the Engineer, and yes, ladies and gentlemen, this is not a drill. The DC Extended Universe finally has a movie that's good without any qualifiers, and we're here today to talk about it. But first, the pleasantries. Mark, how have you been?
Oh, it's been so long since the last tool shed.
I didn't know that warranted a musical interlude.
First time for everything. How am I doing? Doing all right. I've been tweeting a lot within the confines of the Church of Petrol, and it's actually something that I wanted to talk about. It's been keeping me busy as kind of like a side project to, last year I bought a new rear end, because the rear end in the Firebird right now is, posi traction, which is another word for limited slip differential, with disc brakes instead of, like, well, on the current bird, it's drums, which suck, because they're spring-loaded, and they suck, and you need special tools to maintenance it, and it sucks. So, last year, from a disabled war vet, and he brought it down from Virginia Beach, which was extremely nice of him. And he brought it down to the Greater Philadelphia Expo Center, which will have Bennett and I darkening its doors at the end of this month. So I kind of sat on it for the longest time, kind of afraid of it. Like, what have I just bought myself into? Even though there's really nothing complicated about it. It's, you know, some brake line and some nuts and bolts and whatever. But decided that instead of installing it rusty as is, that I would start to refurbish it. So Brian and I and Pete, we started grinding at it and getting all the loose rust off and using this rust reforming spray that kind of turns the whole thing a beautiful matte black, painted the calipers, did all this stuff, and now just sitting around waiting for the money to be right for me to buy brake pads and for the weather to be right for the two or three of us to kind of get that job done. So that's been a nice little project to have, and I'm going to dovetail that into another thought, but first, why don't we get to how Bennett's been?
Well, actually, in a long time, I actually have kind of a lot of going on with me personally. I've been kind of quiet about it publicly, but I have been on a weight loss journey for the last 3 months, and I hate talking about it in general because you can't talk about it without feeling like you're humble bragging, because, you know, it's you're talking about what you're changing your life in a lot of ways, and you're devoting a lot of time to what you're doing. And to people who aren't doing it, it feels like, oh, you son of a bitch, how dare you try to better yourself? And that's always, you know, and it feels like every time you try to talk about it, that's what they're thinking. So I'm trying to find a way to talk about what's going on without feeling like, you know, I'm such a heel. But yeah, I have.
Like, Brad didn't talk about it.
Brad didn't talk about it.
He was just swimming in his clothes on film one day.
People started noticing when, you know, when you can see it in this face, when you see the weight loss in a person's face. And you can start to see it in mine, in that I finally have a jawline now, which is, you know, unique to me. This isn't the thinnest I've been in, my adult life. I believe when I was 18, I was like 225, and I still have yet to touch there, but, you know, I'm getting there, and I feel like I can get there pretty soon, as long as I keep doing what I'm doing. So, I've lost about 34 pounds over the last 3 months, and, it's easier than I expected, but by no stretch has it been easy. You know what I mean? It's,
Yeah, I mean, I lost 17 pounds between December and April, and it's not the easiest thing in the world. You know, like, thankfully, as my diet has kind of tapered off a little bit, I have not backslid. Like, I'm still 248, but it's kind of wiggy that it's like, we're roughly the same height, but you weigh less than me, but look heavier than me. And that just further proves to me that, like, the reason why I don't float in a pool is because I am just fucking dense.
No comment. But yeah, I've been I've been very, very mindful of what I've been putting inside my body, and you'd be amazed at what you can adapt to as long as you stick with it. Like, it's getting to the point where I'm actually looking forward to my plain turkey sandwich with nothing on it and my protein shake. I actually had a chunk musclehead moment. I had, like, one of those, like, a nickname from a Space Mutiny moment. I was actually earlier tonight. Yeah, I was actually earlier tonight. I had to make a run to my grocery store before it closed. And I was looking at my Muscle Milks, and they were on sale, and I actually had the thought process, like, oh, dude, half off milk protein shakes. These things are never off. And I just grabbed, like, three crates of it, and I went out to the grocery store. When did I turn into this person, Mark? When did I turn into this guy who's looking at creatine powder and just like, hey, this is actually very good?
Roughly 6 months ago.
if we must put a timestamp on it. So yeah, I use an app mostly to keep track of my caloric intake, and when you're a gamer, that is a great way to lose weight because you're used to gamifying life. Like, you got to get this amount of points, or you got to do this achievement. And when you use an app that basically keeps the number tally of what you're putting in your body, and you're trying to keep it under a certain level, all of a sudden it becomes like a challenge. It becomes an actual physical goal. And when something is incremental and slow changing as weight loss, if you can't see the gradual results of your work, at the very least you could look at a number that says you did this and you did that. And you could look at that and say, okay, I feel accomplished, which, you know, it can feel very rare in a weight loss journey.
Well, if you can collect all the Riddler trophies, you can manage this.
Well, I will admit that it doing that very much, doing that also kind of plays into my meticulous kind of nature, as it were, that my meticulous nature. And it's not, I'm not going to say that what I'm doing is for everyone either. That'd be, you know, speaking beyond my ken.
It's totally easy. Go ahead. Just swap your life around and, you know, just limit yourself to 15 to 1700 calories a day. Go to the gym even though you hate it. it's so easy. It's amazing.
I'm finding that the adage of losing weight isn't hard, but keeping it off is the hardest part to be kind of true. But then again, I got so much weight to lose that I've yet to reach that point where I'm just supposed to maintain. I try to find some kind of consensus of what I should be weighing, as so that way I know what my goal should be. But it's anywhere between 165 to 180. And I feel like I need to split the difference and say like 170. And everyone I tell that to, they're always at the exact same thing. It's like, 170, you'd be thin as a rail. It's like, I lost 30 pounds, but I don't know where I'm losing that weight either. So maybe 170 looks a lot thicker than you would think it looked like. You know, it's especially
possible. I mean, like, even as you lose weight, you know, like, you're broad shouldered, you're broad chested. Like, we were talking about that the other night. Where the new episode of Anime Abandon, he's wearing this fucking Austin 316 shirt, and it is dominating the frame.
Like, you gotta give credit to WWE. They knew how to design a shirt so that even the people up in the nosebleed sections could see what the heck was going on.
Yeah, and the thing is that, like, you have a chest like a fucking billboard, so we need to, like, advertise Anime Abandon on your chest whenever it is that you go out in public. Like, subscribe, like, favorite, and subscribe to Anime Abandon just straight down your fucking middle. but even, you know, like, even if you get down to 170, like, you are still going to be a broad-shouldered, broad-chested person.
Yeah, and I tried to find, I went to my doctors, and I went to, and I've read every available resource online, reputable resource online, and they all basically said the exact same thing. It's like, well, even though you're broad of chest, you're kind of small of frame, just as evidenced by my small wrists and small elbows. So by any stretch, I should be about 165 to 170.
It's like, cutting your doctor and's like, you are like a child's drawing of Superman.
I suppose you could say that I'm an upside down trapezoid of a person when you really get down to it. It's, you know, I'm all shoulder really, really wide frame, but it's really wide frame, but a small frame. It's like I'm Flat Stanley. So trying to go through the whole process of not only keeping mindful of my diet, but also finding an exercise that not only burns a lot of calories, but is something that I can enjoy doing at a long period of time, has been eventful. But I think I found my niche of just, you know, long distance running. I've actually kind of proud of myself how, you know, how far I can run under certain circumstances. Or under a treadmill circumstances. Trying to run in heat is like asking the sun to dare him to give you a sunstroke.
Yeah, no, fuck that. See, like, I can go to the gym, I can hit the elliptical, I can hit the treadmill. But, you know, people are like, oh, well, you know, like, if you don't like going to the gym, then you could always just go for a walk. And I'm like, yeah, but here's the problem with that. You hit the wall, and then you gotta walk back. You know, like, it's like fucking Racer X, right? Just like, by the end of my walk, it's like someone just said, break his legs and make him walk back. Like, I want no part of that. I so much prefer to, like, run in a gym and then limp out to my car and then just, like, push my, like, use my right hand to kind of push my leg down into the pedal. And that's how I get home.
I got to the point where walking around town long distances like that, I actually had to plan in accordance for that. I would plan a trek, plan a route rather, that would bring me back to my house before I would hit the wall. So that way, you know, I would hit the wall just a half a mile from my house, or I would hit the wall just as I get to about the curb. And that was where I knew I was getting somewhere, but at the exact same time, I couldn't keep track of how fast I was running, nor could I keep track of the exact, you know, distance and how long I was running for. And that was information I would have liked to have. So I just switched over to just running on the treadmill, so that way I could keep a nice steady pace. I know basically how many calories I'm burning, and I know what my sweat is worth. You know, sometimes you got to learn how to put the caloric intake to the muscle, as it were.
Vein of mm-hmm. more and more life advice, because we know so much.
Well, we learn more every day, as long as we keep living life.
Yeah, man, there's really something to be said about that whole Matthew McConaughey just keep living thing. Which, when I say that to people, they're just like, all right. It's like, no, seriously, like, think about that. You know, like, think, like, listen to the story and then think about it for a minute. But I was kind of sitting around the garage, because I've taken to sitting in the garage and just, you know, like, tinkering around, thinking as I've been working on this project. And, you know, like, there's all this talk of adulting. You know, like, I'm adulting today. Let's have adulting classes. We need to start retraining people on how to be adults. And the thing that I think is the most important, because this kind of came up after I had an issue with a friend who he was building his own rig, and I had to kind of come over and help at the 11th hour. This is the most important thing, the most important piece of advice that I can impart to people in this phase of life, this phase of my life, and whatever phase of life you happen to be in. Buy a basic toolkit. It seems simple. It seems almost like, well, who wouldn't have one? Or why should I need one? Like, you're going to be in one of those two camps. But everyone should have a basic toolkit. It should have a basic set of sockets and a ratchet and a couple of pliers, maybe a set of vice grips, you know, buy a hammer separately, and a shit ton of screwdrivers. Whether it be a modular screwdriver that comes with screwdriving bits, or if it comes with precision screwdrivers, whatever. There's a 130-piece toolkit that Harbor Freight sells for like $30 that is by Pittsburgh Tools, and it's perfectly fine. Everyone needs a basic toolkit. Because, you know, like, pretty much my friend was going through this vanity drawer that was just full of flotsam, jetsam, odds and ends, you know, loose pieces of string and, you know, change from the 50s. And, you know, like, it, like he could not produce three whole screwdrivers. He could not produce one set of pliers, which thankfully I had a set of pliers in the bird because there's always tools strewn around between the bird and the garage. Despite the fact that I just got a tool chest, but I still have plenty of extra tools where I can fill the chest and still keep tools in the car for basic repair while I'm on the road. So, basic toolkit, you know, like it doesn't have to be 130 piece, but minimum 80 piece toolkit is something that everybody needs. And, you know, like you'll run into people that are like, you might even be one of these people that's like, oh, well, you know, like my mom and dad have tools or my friends have tools or what the hell ever. But the thing is that it's weird how some people think about asking other people for favors. Like they won't think anything about borrowing tools but they'll think something about borrowing, you know, like $1 or $5 or something like that. Except tools cost money, and if you break one, if you break a friend's tool or your mom or dad's tools, then that costs money. Like there is a more significant investment in owning tools than and the tools that you break or lose than the paltry amount of money that you might ask someone to borrow.
I guess because money by itself is, you know, the gateway to everything. So it's like money could be used for an emergency situation. It could be used to buy food. There is very few situations in which money cannot solve a practical situation. Whereas a tool, even though it's meant to solve a practical problem, it's not necessarily a practical problem that one arrives at in everyday life. So people don't think too much about the repercussions of borrowing somebody's tool and misusing them. Although I do remember you talking a great deal about, basically expounding the virtues of the Craftsman tool brand, in that if you manage to break a Craftsman tool, you were either trying to break a Craftsman tool or you're as inadvertently strong as the Incredible Hulk, and they will actually replace your tools free of charge, lifetime warranties and everything.
Yeah, like they have an absolute lifetime warranty. However, Craftsman tools are expensive. Most people aren't going to break a Craftsman tool, but then again, most people aren't going to break a Pittsburgh tool or a Chicago Tools tool either. you know, like I do heavier duty work, but not the heaviest dutiest work that is done in a mechanics bay. But still, you know, like I've broken ratchets, I've bent screwdrivers, I've ground down bits to the point where they won't cut anymore. But most people, you know, would not run into these situations because, you know, the toughest thing they're going to run into is a plank of wood or a piece of drywall. And, you know, like there was, and I really, you know, like I really don't tell these stories when they happen just because I never want to be like, look at me, I'm so superhero-like. But I was driving to the Wawa at one point a couple of months ago. And I'm on a road, and I just watch from two lights down. I watch this kid just completely fucking wipe out on his bike, and his front wheel just goes flying off the fork of the bike, and I mean like gone, which is not normal. Like you know, like as a kid, you wipe out on your bike all the fucking time. Like you learn the art of the bail, but the bike is usually fine, you know, like, it's like, what the fuck were you doing that you bent the handlebars or bent the fork? I mean, bikes are built kid tough. So to watch this wheel fly off this bike, I was just like, Jesus! So I, you know, go up to the two lights, and I turn the corner, right hand, and I park, and I go up to these kids, and I'm just like, is everybody, like, are you okay? Is everything fine? And kid's like my wheel flew off, like, I don't know. And I'm like, all right. So I go back to the bird out of the back. I grab the same vice grips that I just used the other night. And because I didn't have a socket set in the car at that point. But I start going over this fork, and it's like, all right, fork's fine. And, you know, like the axle for the wheel is slightly bent, but it's fine. And pretty much what had happened was that this kid was riding around on a bike with a front wheel that had two nuts, which were hand tight. This is not good. This is indicative of the fact that he had no access to no tools, and that whoever is in charge of said kid did not have access to any tools and did not think anything of like, oh, well, you know, like we'll take the wheel off and we'll fucking, you know, replace an inner tube or what the fuck ever. And so I get the vice grips. I tighten it as tightly as I can while still saying to this kid, you need to get a socket wrench or a box wrench, and you need to tighten this until it resists you, you know, like about so much, because there's still going to be some play in this if I do this with a set of vice grips. And it's like, I can tell that it's just like bouncing off of his fucking eyeballs, going in one ear and out the other. Like I can't process how it is that this was my fault or the fault of anybody who helps me maintenance my bike. So as I'm doing this, the kid next to him says, can you tighten my handlebars? And I'm thinking, like, okay, so someone says tighten my handlebars, they mean that, like, okay, well, then the clamp that holds the handlebars on is kind of loose, so there's a little bit of forward-backward play in the bars. And I checked that, and solid. However, what I then checked was I put the wheel between my two legs, and then I moved it left to right, and pretty much the handlebars just start moving in a circle. And I'm just like, you gotta be kidding me. You cannot ride your bike like this. So best will I had, I tried to get his handlebars tight against the fork and told him the same thing. It's like, you need to get a socket wrench and tighten this tightly, or else you are going to end up even worse than your friend over here. Do you both get me? Yeah, we get it. I'm like, you know, like, I don't think you do, but you will when you break something.
When you inadvertently, you know, lean too hard and then you go face plant and dust your teeth.
Seriously, I mean, like, one good bump, one wrong turn, and these handlebars would have just been spinning in an opposite direction and he would have had no control of the bike. So in remembering that experience just now, and in this most recent experience I had with my buddy, my current life advice of anything I've ever said, and this is the thing that I feel the strongest about: basic toolkit. Go get one if you don't have one. Don't depend on your friend's tools. Don't go borrowing shit. You know, you're like, you spend money on games and frivolities and all sorts of shit. You can spend $30 on a basic toolkit that you may only ever use once a year, but it might be the one time when you really need one. And I would just rather be the person that people borrow tools from than the person who needs to borrow tools.
If one must have to choose between the two. Yeah, I actually felt... I was actually in your place. Well, I was actually kind of in that same situation as the kid, but only on a much grander scale with my car. About a month ago, my low beams stopped working out on the road at night, at the worst possible time. So that was a fun drive back home. So where basically I had to put on the high beams, but I was on a highway that for some reason or another, even though it was around 1 a.m. at night, decided to have a whole parade of cars going the other way. So I just kind of like, do I be the jackass and flash my high beams right in their face, or do I kind of switch them off and then just try to guess where the road is? So that's an experience I do not wish on anyone. If I don't know if you've ever been inside a car at night driving around without any lights on, it's really, really unsettling.
It is. Like you're covering the distance of a football field inside of a couple of seconds with no good sense of where you're going or how you're kind of pitched. So, cause yeah, like I've had the lights go on me because the battery was going, or because, you know, like X thing in the power system was going. It's like, okay, you got to turn the lights off to make it home.
Yeah. I actually had that moment even earlier this year when my alternator was going off. But yeah, so I looked up online and I diagnosed the problem as a problem with the actual light switch in the steering column. And Mark here helped me get the right part. And it was actually my very first experience fixing something on my car. And I don't know if any of you guys out there have ever tried to remove the plastic sheath around your steering column before, but you might as well be trying to pry open the jaws of an alligator. Even if you take out the screws, you still have to get your fingers in between the where they meet to try and pull them apart. But unfortunately, I don't know if this is true for every car, but it's certainly true for every Honda I see. They use little plastic clips to keep them together.
Which, you know, they make a tool for that. Like, there is explicitly a tool for that.
But if you do not have a tool, if you do not have said tool, you just kind of have to rely on your mitts. But even then, you're still, you know, basically asking yourself to get bloody fingers, basically trying to pull apart strong plastic. So I just, even though the instructional video that Mark helped me find said, do not use a screwdriver to pry it apart, I was at my wit's end. It's like, you know, screw it. I have to use a screwdriver to get these apart. And I broke a clip, but, you know, the video said, well, you might break a clip if you're doing this, but, you know, that's just inevitable. So I take it apart. I managed to get it apart. Luckily, I didn't slice my fingers open. And I pull apart, you know, take out the old light switch, put in the new switch. It took starting the car on and off again. But eventually my low beams worked again. So that was a little proud moment for me for, you know, a little bit of frustration and sweat, but, you know, fixing a problem for the expense of a new light switch. So which
was,
you
like
know,
$40.
It was like $40, which, you know, like it probably if we wanted to go out and like really price shop around and maybe go to a few junkyards, maybe we could have found a better price, but for, you know, a quick fix without having to pay a mechanic to do what is, like, looking at it, anyone could do this job. But luckily, you know, I drive a Honda, which, as you described it once, is the Lego of cars. Everything is pretty much, you know, like modular and just put in and out. So I think I lucked out on that. If I was driving something else, maybe it would be a more involved process. I believe you explained to me that replacing the light switch in the Firebird, for example, meant threading a very, very fine wire through a hose of some sort, if I remember correctly, right?
Yeah, like the comparison is this, is that looking at what Bennett was looking at, it's like, okay, so there's the cowl that's underneath the steering column, that big piece of plastic that's like, it's part of the, what's called a kick panel, which is exactly what the hell it's for. It's just to prevent you from kicking shit. So it's the cowl for the steering column. And then the whole thing, just like the whole switch, everything is routed through this one switch and it just comes out and it's a plastic clip plug and it's just out. Okay. That's simple. And that's all of his switches. That's high beam, low beam, the controller for the wipers, and the turn signal. All of those things exist separately in the Bird. So there is a light switch that is separate. There is a turn signal switch, which is separate. And there is a hazard switch, which is separate. Like all those pieces that are in one piece in Bennett's car are in like three or four or five different pieces in my car. And right around the same time, my turn signal switch decided that it didn't want to work anymore. So I had no left-hand turn signal, which was bad. Thankfully, I had already prepared for that, and I had the spare switch. However, in order to get the switch in, you have to take the steering wheel off, and then you have to take the lock plate, which locks the steering wheel when the key is out of the ignition, off, which requires a tension clamp remover. And then you have to remove the switch, which itself is threaded through the steering column, which is a very tight space. So in having done this before, I just cut the wire for the old turn signal switch, just cut it with scissors and just pull the wire straight out, because it's a big plastic plug that's about 8 inches long. It's 8 inches long and like a quarter inch thick, and it does not go through this column easily. And then I have to take guitar string and grease up the new switch and then pull it through, because it has to be something strong like guitar string or plastic twine. But in this case, I actually used a coat hanger, Because it has to be something tense, because, I mean, like, if, like, anything less and your line's just gonna snap. So, and that took about an hour and a half of just very slow, very, very meticulous, just, like, don't cut anything, don't scratch anything, don't expose any wire. And, you know, like, now I've got a new turn signal switch, but it is something that, you know, like, if the next person who had an older car, an older GM car, said, like, oh, my turn signal switch doesn't work, okay, let me do that for you. I'm not going to encourage you to do that on your own. Because that would just be demonic of me to do.
Yeah, that's, I wouldn't exactly consider that experience a, like, oh, you know, 10 out of 10 would do again. But it, at the end of the frustration and after the end of the sweat, you do feel a kernel of accomplishment that I find to be kind of rare and missing in today's, you know, modern life, where most of anything inside your house ever breaks, you just replace it.
Yeah, we just throw shit away all the time. And, you know, I mean, that's fine. If you can afford it, you can afford it. But, you know, like, it's like sometimes it's needs must as the devil drives. I was talking to a neighbor about that, and, like, he'd never heard that phrase before. And because he came to me asking me about looking at his car. You know, thinking that it was going to be some involved process, like, well, a mechanic just told me that, you know, one of my ignition coils is bad, and it's going to cost, like, $600 to replace it. And I've never laid eyes on this Cadillac before. It's like a Cadillac Seville CTS, or SLS or something like that. And I walk across the street and open his hood, whip out my phone, and I'm like, where are... Because I can't see where the ignition wires are going. Like I can see the ignition wires. I can see where they're going to the spark plugs. I have no idea where they're going to what I think is one ignition coil. It is not one ignition coil. It is four. And they are all sitting on top of the engine. And he's thinking, like, well, yeah, like, that's going to be complicated, right? And I'm like, okay, here's your four ignition coils. Yeah, well, which one's bad? I don't know. But you may as well replace all four of them, because if one goes bad, the rest are probably going to go bad eventually. Well, that's a good point. This job requires one wrench. Seriously? How many nuts do you see? Eight? Yeah. That's one wrench. Wow. Like, yeah. Wow. You know, like, people make money based on what you don't know or what you're afraid of. And, you know, or what you don't have time for or whatever. Like, I still take my car to a mechanic for all of my protestation and for all of my, you know, like, long and involved stories. Like, I still take my car to a mechanic because I don't have a bay, you know, like, I don't know dick of what I'm doing anywhere near my transmission, but everything that is within arm's reach and eyesight, usually I'm okay. And we were talking just a couple days ago where I talk about like feeling this weird sense of responsibility and encouraging people to do their own shit. Because, you know, like, if something goes wrong, it's like, well, I'm the one that encouraged them to do that. And what if they get really discouraged if something goes wrong? Because it's not like they can come to me directly and be like, well, what do I do now? So, you know, like, I encourage people to do whatever they can. Like, it's not exclusively car repair. You know, like install your own graphics card. Upgrade your fucking memory. Like, fix, to a lesser extent, fix that light switch. Just make sure you turn the breaker off first. Just, you know, just... Look at your world, see what's broken, do some research, and decide whether or not you can fix it with a little bit of time, research, and effort, and safety applied. But I still do feel that really interesting sense of responsibility, where, like, if something goes wrong, they can't really come to me, so they're gonna be as on their own as I've always been in turn. But the thing is that, like, I've never really been on my own because of the fact that I exist in the information age. Everything is a Google search away. Everything is documented. You know, like, everybody's got a camera in their phone now, and everybody has a YouTube account. So there is no way in the conceivable universe that what I am experiencing right now has not been experienced, documented, and posted by at least one other person on this planet. And that's my comfort.
At least one would hope. Although I will say that the time spent on the Honda Element forums trying to diagnose my problem... When you see problems that, you know, when you see those exact same problems being listed back in 2008 and 2009, you begin to wonder, like, what, like, how am I 7 years behind the curve? as far as like something that apparently is like was a common problem in Honda Elements, especially my make and model.
Which just means that you were lucky in the sense that you outran a factory problem for a really long time.
Which reminds me, I still need to get that new passenger airbag. Well, put that on the to-do list. And speaking of to-do lists, I believe at the top of the episode we teased a discussion of Wonder Woman, which I saw it with Gabe. And I did a Sage Versus on it. If you hadn't seen it, go ahead and watch it on the site. But if you want my condensed view on it, I really, really liked it. I think it was a surprisingly good movie, especially considering its contemporaries in its in its extended universe. Had a little few problems with it towards the end, but I think that's, you know, a lot of people who I checked in with their feelings on the movie pretty much echoed my sentiments. But I know that Mark, you saw the movie, and I know you were very excited about it, so I'm going to let you have the floor talking about your experience watching this movie. So,
well, I went in with no expectations because, you know, like, I sat through Man of Steel, I sat through Batman Superman, like, I haven't seen Suicide Squad, but I went in with no expectations because it's fucking Snyderverse, like, it's that's one foot in the grave as far as I'm concerned, you know, like, current track record. But I wanted to see it, and my sister had seen it, and she didn't like it, and she's the hugest Wonder Woman fan. And I was like, huh. But I walked out of that film having liked it, you know, because I'm a sucker for a period film. But, you know, like, just the fact that, one, the trailers for that movie just do not sell it properly. They really don't.
I concur with that. It was actually pretty bad trailers for what the movie wound up being.
Yeah, like it's just pretty much like action fucking declaration, and then just slam into the theme and the title card. It's just like, this is not the movie that you're trying to sell right now. And you know, like I walked in no expectations and walked out just like, this movie is amazing. It is the first one that I'm gonna buy on DVD. Like fuck Batman Superman, fuck Man of Steel, fuck Suicide Squad. You know, like I am all about Wonder Woman. like I really do. I tweeted that it stands head and shoulders with the animated film, which is one of my top five favorite DCAU films. I love the way it shot. I love the cinematography. I love the action sequences. I love the fucking No Man's Land sequence. I really love the dialogue. I love that Etta Candy doesn't just sit around and do nothing. You know, like, there was a lot for me to like about the movie, especially, you know, like, in no uncertain terms, it's just like, okay, what are all the things that made the first Avenger work? You know, like, fucking, like, everything that makes Captain America work, let's just fucking unwrite Captain America, unwrite World War II, change World War I, you know. Mm-hmm. And, you know, other than, you know, the giggling proto-Nazi. he's so out of place.
Yeah, he kind of is, but that's where, like, it kind of feeds into my problems with the third act of the movie. Which, I don't know if we want to avoid spoilers here in this discussion here. So I'll try to wrap up my thoughts with a very vague statement of, you know, for the teasing bad guy throughout, like, the first two acts, I think the movie would have been better served had when happened to him in the third act actually been the final thing in the movie. Because I think the theme it was building upon, whether or not Wonder Woman can really handle what the real world is like, would have been better served had that been the definitive end. You know what I mean?
Well, I mean, I see what the point of the end was that, you know, like, the whole thing pretty much bangs out is that, you know, like, Ares is not the root of all evil. Evil is the root of all evil. And that's, like, and you know, that was a fine thing in terms of, like, you know, like, Diana needs to realize that it's not a world of gods anymore. That all the gods are dead, and that you know, like, that man just persists in its own machinations, for good or for bad. And, you know, like that was fine. You know, like, even though the end of the movie is pretty much just watching God of War happen, and it is.
Yeah, well, you know what? I think I'm kind of I'm of two minds on that. One, I hate the fact that it undermines what the movie was trying to build. It really undercuts that. But on the other hand, it's not like it's not entertaining, you know? It's not like it's not fun to see, you know, Wonder Woman, you know, kick all kinds of ass, explosive, fiery ass. So it's like, it's sort of like a damned if you do, damned if you don't kind of a situation. Although it's not like we didn't see her kick tons of ass before in the movie.
Yeah, I mean, like, the No Man's Land sequence is the action centerpiece of the movie, hands down. From the front line of No Man's Land all the way to the other side of No Man's Land, like, that is the action set piece of the movie. Like, the end of the movie where it's just, like, just watching God of War play itself, you know, like, that's fine, but it just doesn't have the punch of the No Man's Land sequence.
No, it doesn't. I will say that when we were experiencing the extended fight going into the village, Gabe literally let out a, you know, like a hoop and hollering and clapping and applauding. That was something. Like,
see, I would have punched him in the dick right then. Just like, shut up. People are trying to enjoy the movie.
Yeah. I try to keep everything. Like, we try to be good moviegoers, but there is sometimes, like, I'm trying to see it from his perspective. He was just on, like, the edge of his seat, just shucking and jiving with everything the movie had to throw at him.
I don't care. I don't care. Because then it's not about the movie for one split second. It's about these two jackasses, like, fucking cheering in the middle of my movie that I'm trying to enjoy. Like, I don't care how big a fucking fan of jack of shit you are. Like, I have seen amazing moments in superhero film. Fantastic moments. And you know what? Like, when a whole audience applauses, that's the whole audience enjoying the fucking movie. But when some jackass is enjoying it way, way, way too much, and just, just fucking gets up, and it's just like, sit your dumb ass down. You sit the fuck down, because this movie isn't called Gabe, it's called Wonder Woman. Sit the fuck down.
It's like, when we watched Godzilla, the entire theater erupted into applause and cheers.
Right? When fucking, yeah. Like, just grabs his fucking jaw, you know, like, everybody's into that.
Yeah, so he was, like, we were actually kind of surprised that everyone else was, like, you know, was applauding and cheering that happening. We were kind of, like, surprised at that, because we had never seen that before in a group setting. And, that was one of the best experiences we've ever had doing Sage Versus from a group setting. And, but yet in that one insular moment, when Wonder Woman, like, flips over the armored car, he equaled that amount of energy into that one moment of whooping and hollering and, you know, meat clapping. Like, he was clapping like Brendan Fraser clapped in that GIF, you know, like that.
Yeah, I don't tolerate that from movie going with my friends, which there will be times when friends talk to me during films and I just don't respond in order to encourage them to shut the fuck up, where, like, I'm just really into it, or they're talking too much, you know, like every once in a while, you know, like, you lean in and you go, like, ah, you know, but beyond that, you know, like, I'm a very respectful fucking moviegoer, but, you know, like, when there's an energy over the room, then, you know, like, everybody does the fucking wave. But see, that's not, like, I love the No Man's Land sequence. The No Man's Land sequence fucking was the hardest fucking sell, where I'm just like, oh my god, is she just gonna tear through? Is she gonna walk through fucking No Man's Land, a place that I've seen in so many fucking films, where it's just like, there's a reason why it's called No Man's Land. And, you know, like, it's just gonna be fucking Diana the Terminator. And it wasn't. You know, like, she had to fight her way across No Man's Land, and, you know, like, she gets fucking held down by machine gun fire, and it's great. It's a fantastic, hard-fought, hard-earned sequence of victory, and even at that, you know, like, I feel that, like, yeah, go do it, but I don't feel like, yeah, go do it, you know, like, and I would have just punched Gabe in the dick, like, sit down. there's always a person that's way too into it in the theater, depending on what movie you're seeing, but there's always going to be a person during action movies that's just way too into it, and the last thing you want is to be next to that guy. Because that person is officially making a spectacle of themselves. They are distracting from the fucking movie. Everyone's looking at them sideways because they just made a huge fucking noise. You know, like, okay, so here's a weird experience. Sidetrack. Went to go see Alien Covenant. It sucks. And someone, like an asshole, released a balloon in the theater. And this balloon was, like, actively losing helium, right? So it could not keep its height for any fucking reason. So it's just slowly, lazily floating up and down the screen, casting a fucking heart-shaped shadow. And it's doing this for half a fucking hour. And, you know, I want to be cheeky and say, like, it was the most entertaining part of Alien Covenant. But it wasn't. It was really fucking annoying. And then it finally started to lose its fucking traction. It starts losing fucking altitude, and one dude in the front fucking row fucking jumped it and caught it and pulled it down, and the whole audience applauded. Having nothing to do with the film. It's just the fact that this dude who didn't have to do anything about it, who could have just, like, sat around like so many people, like, it'll lose oxygen eventually. You know, like, while I'm sitting there contemplating, like, God damn it, I wish I had my BB gun right now. you know, like, he jumped for it, got it, pulled it down, and popped it. Whole audience heard it. And everybody's like, yay, thank you! You know? And that's a moment that the whole audience can fucking share in. But when one dude's just, like, way, way, way too fucking into it, it's just, no, sit your ass down.
Gabe would have been better suited if he wasn't the only one, or at least wasn't one of a smidgen of people in the theater. To his credit and to his defense, he wasn't the only one who was hooping and hollering, although he was the one of the only three or four people who hooped and hollered at that one particular moment.
See, actually, I hoop and holler at home. I laugh raucously at home. You know, like those are the things that I do when I'm enjoying a film at home. When I am in public, you know, it's please silence your cell phones and shut the fuck up.
Unless
those are
the
two rules.
Unless it's a comedy, then laugh when you're supposed to laugh.
Yeah. You know, but otherwise, just, like, don't be sitting there, like, vibrating in your fucking seat and jumping up at shit. It's just, sit your ass down, enjoy the fucking movie, jump up and down when you're out of the theater and you're recalling the whole of what it is that you just experienced. But the last thing that I want in my first ever fucking Wonder Woman movie experience that I saw fit to go see in a theater when there are so many films that I don't, is to remember, and then there was this part during the No Man's Land sequence where this one jackass who was just way too fucking into the whole thing just starts hooping and fucking hollering. Right, like, and I could hear him above a massive surround system, you know, like, and now I've got his goofy fucking silhouette in my fucking head like so much MST3K during the No Man's Land sequence, and it's burned into my brain, and it's never going anywhere.
It's actually kind of apropos that you brought up Alien Covenant. I didn't share this story with you, but I told it on Sage Versus where during our viewing of Alien Covenant, by the way, I concur with Mark, it sucks on ice. But during that one moment, that one brief fleeting moment of levity for me, in a scene that was not supposed to have any levity to it whatsoever, where his name escapes me.
Magneto. All their names escape me.
Guy who plays Magneto in the current X-Men. Fassbender. Fassbender. Yeah. Where Fassbender is basically talking to himself, and he's getting himself to play the flute, and he has to say this dialogue, which sounds ridiculously innuendo-laden. Like, here, put your mouth on the hole, and I'll do the fingering. I had to, like, stab myself in the knee to keep myself from laughing as hard as I wanted to. And it really hurt to know that other people weren't making anywhere near the level of effort I was to keep it within myself.
No, because it's a dumbass scene.
It's a dumbass fucking scene. And then there's people in the front of me who are just cackling like hyenas, even though this was not supposed to be a funny scene. And then there's me just like, God damn it.
Yeah, just like, just the fucking skin flute sequence from Space Dicks, the sequel. It's just, you know, like, I don't even want to talk about Alien Covenant. I hate it so much. Just because it was just I just want one more good Alien film. That's all I want. It doesn't even have to have Ripley in it. Just one more good Alien film before I die. Is that so much to ask?
Apparently it is.
But Wonder Woman, I can't express how into this movie I was without jumping out of my chair and hooping and hollering, apparently. But there wasn't a single part of this movie that I really didn't like. Even the giggling proto-Nazi. Like, I... just the scene with the gas, and they lock in all the dudes, and they throw the gas mask in. Like, that was it for me, where it's just like, this dude is unreal. He is un-fucking real. He is like Colonel Clink levels of un-fucking real.
They don't know that the gas mask won't do anything.
Yeah, like, and not like, and he's not like a hand-wringing evil kind of proto-villain. He is a steepled finger, you know, like playing the flute with his fingers, sort of, you know, like a tittering proto-Nazi. And you know, because at first they give him a scene where it's like, take this man seriously, and then they do the gas scene and it's like, I can't take this man seriously anymore. Are you serious with this? But you know, like, I liked Chris Pine as Steve Trevor, and you know, like, spoiler alert, he dies. Which is something I want to talk about. So often, the story of Wonder Woman and Steve Trevor is that, you know, like, Wonder Woman continues to live and be young and what the hell ever, and, you know, like, she eventually comes, like, she finds Steve, and Steve's, you know, like old, and, you know, like, on, like, at the end of his life in a VA hospital or something like that. And that was one of my questions going into the movie. Like, I wonder how they're going to fucking handle this. Essentially, are they going to do an Agent Carter? Because that's what happens in Captain America, right?
So I think, like, even though how much they aped from First Avenger, I figure, you know, like, I figured that they knew they couldn't get away with that, so they had to find a way to give him a graceful and heroic exit from the movie.
Well, the thing is that they could have gotten away with that, because that is just as much a part of Wonder Woman's ongoing story as it is a part of Steve Rogers' ongoing story. So they could have done the exact same thing, where, you know, like, Peggy Carter, old and at the end of her fucking life, just, you know, like, in a, you know, like, in a hospital bed or what the hell ever, and then, you know, like, she finds out in a phone call or a letter that, you know, like, oh, Steve passed, you know. And that was my question going into the movie, was how they were going to handle that. And instead, they Ted Kord him, not Ted Kord, actual Ted Kord, Brave and the Bold Ted Kord, where, you know, he goes for self-sacrifice, blows up, blaze of glory, whatever, saves the day. And, you know, and I thought, like, yeah, sure, why not? You know, because that means that she still has to deal with the loss of Steve. And, you know, but we don't have to see, like, an old... doddering Steve, you know, just having, it's like, with no real set of excuses as to why it is he hasn't seen Diana in so long, other than the fact that she's been busy. So I liked that, and I liked Chris Pine as Steve Trevor, because in a world where Nathan Fillion was too old to play the role, in a world where Nathan Fillion's been Steve Trevor, he was Steve Trevor in the animated film, I dug it a bunch. Yeah, I liked Pine in the role.
Yeah, like, Chris Pine as Steve Trevor, to me, is, like, the premier combo. Like, this was the role that can really... That I liked him the most in. And this is coming off of his best turn as Captain Kirk in Star Trek III. Basically because he was finally in a Star Trek movie that was actually knew what it wanted to be and just led away with all the baggage that the Star Trek franchise came with Star Trek 1 and 2. Especially Star Trek 2. But,
I don't know. Like, I'm not so hugely down on Star Trek 2 these days. I mean, I still think that it's a movie that, you know, continues in the shadow of Deep Space Nine, where it's like, oh, Starfleet's corrupt. That's the only thing that comes out of DS9. But ultimately, I was like, nah, you know, like looking back at it, like, it's three complete films. Like, okay, so we get what is essentially Star Wars, and then we get a DS9 in TOS sequel, and then we get this very interesting day in the life action film. Like, you know what? Like, it's a good solid three movies.
But I still say, like, Star Trek 3 was the best of the three because, you know, once they didn't feel like you have to bend over backwards to for this narrative to retcon the entire original series and in Next Gen and everything else. And two, they didn't try to tie it back to the well-known Star Trek movies because with the whole, you know, Nguyen Sinyin Khan. I know I'm pronouncing his name wrong. You know,
Khan Nguyen Sinh.
Khan Nguyen Sinh, yeah. Khan Nguyen Sinh. But they didn't try to turn, you know, take it back without any of the lead up for which the original Star Trek 2 had. So, and finally, Star Trek 3 felt like it could be its own movie, which it wound up being like a 100-minute long episode of Star Trek,
which I dug.
Yeah, which I dug as well. And I felt like that was the first time of the first three movies that Chris Pine really could settle into the groove of being, you know, Captain Kirk. Just, like, let him have a Captain Kirk adventure of his own.
See, and I would take him as Nathan Drake now, honestly. I mean, he'll probably, like, he'd never get it. Like, and they're talking about, like, Tom Holland as Nathan Drake, and I'm just like, this is not a young Indiana Jones situation. Stop it. But
he needs some years under his belt before we could put Tom Holland as Nathan Drake. If we're still going to try to continue on with this video game adaptation, which, you know, at a certain point, like, we've had Indiana Jones. Why do we need to take the video game-inspired version of Indiana Jones and try to make another Indiana Jones?
Because it's new. I don't know. But someone else I liked in Wonder Woman, Lucy Davis. Because I always love Lucy Davis. I love her in, like, I love her in Shaun of the Dead. I love her in Marin, because she plays Mark Maron's agent. And just the fact that they gave Etta Candy stuff to do. You know, like... Like Etta Candy, the forever sidekick who, you know, like, sometimes does stuff, sometimes doesn't. Like, she gets an awesome scene.
Can I also profess my appreciation of Gal Gadot being able to let herself in a role like Wonder Woman and still allow herself to come off as, like, out of her depth and, you know, in a comedic way? Like, her dressing up, you know, putting on ladies clothing, in 1910s ladies clothing, while still carrying around her sword and shield, was hilarious, but also kind of adorable in a certain way, because
it was
kinda...
a good gag, because even though they showed it in the trailer, the setup for that gag helped resell the gag. And honestly, like they get the biggest trophy for just, like, there was no, like, Steve, what is kissing? What is sex? Yeah, you know, like, they just headed off all that shit at the pass.
And they actually made a pretty good joke about it, too. It's like, well, certainly not going to spoil a joke here, but I remember, like, seeing some responses to those tweets, some tweets in response to that joke, and it just made me feel like, you know, the joke there was written with that kind of guy in mind, buddy.
Yeah, like, it's because normally, because so oft is it going to be like, Steve, what is kissing? What is sex? What are genitalia? You know, just the most born yesterday questions humanly possible. And, you know, they firm the whole thing, like, no, we have books and sciences and anatomy, you know, like, we're not stupid. It's just the fact that we are blissfully unaware, because right outside of our beautiful It's Always Sunny in Themyscira bubble is the fucking world at war. But beyond that, you know, like, none of those normal, you know, like, Leeloo gags.
Yeah, like, no, like, there's no Diana Prince asking, you know, like, Dolly Dally Multipass, you know, none of that shit. And they could have easily done that. Nor do they do any of that hacky, totally rote to death bullshit of like, I was expecting, like, during the No Man's Land sequence, for for Diana to just look around and say, I am no man, and she runs into the field.
Yeah, like, I'm glad that they avoided the obvious gag of just, like, No Man's Land, I'm no man, and then, like, and then she fucking vaults, like, she goes over the wall. Like, I was so happy. Now, here's the thing that I ended up talking to my friend about, because he originally wasn't really into seeing the movie, even though he's a DC guy, and he's like, well, like, out of the Trinity, she's the most inconsistent, she's the weakest, and I had to think about that for a minute. It's like, yeah, like, in a lot of ways she is, and in talking to my sister about it, she goes, like, why do you think that is? And I said, because Wonder Woman is the most prone to literary social change. That's why. That more than Batman, more than Superman, like we can, you know, like there's a discernible through line between the golden, silver, and bronze age Superman. There is a discernible through line of the golden age and silver age Batman right up until fucking DKR. And then like that became the definitive fucking Batman. And then from there, you know, like it's, you know, like I am vengeance. I am the knight and I am never going to fucking change from this point onward. But Wonder Woman, go through her Wikipedia page. Oh my God. There have so many interpretations of this. And I'm not talking about writer to writer. I'm talking about decade to decade. That there is a different Wonder Woman for every decade since she has been created.
Well, it comes with the fact that, you know, like her entire being, her reason for existing really came from the fact that, you know, her creator, blanking on his name,
The creator of the polygraph test, we'll just say that. Yeah, move on.
Yeah, listen, the creator of the polygraph, him and his wife felt that there weren't any comic heroes for little girls to look up to. So her entire existence is predicated upon social change and social awareness. So, of course, like from that source, her entire existence kind of, you know, like you could trace her existence and arc like the, you know, like first wave feminism, second wave feminism, third wave feminism and such over the years.
Like because there's Lean In Diana, you know, like where it's like no more Wonder Woman. It's like she's executive now and wears a suit and punches people by night. And then there's like man hating Diana where like all Themyscirans hate men. Like it's not just that they are a society of women. It's that they are a society of women who is deeply xenophobic of men. Like it just goes like, but like there is a Wonder Woman for every decade of social change. And it did occur to me that like the reason why, you know, like that would be a problem for my friend would be because of the fact that it's just like I can get behind like everyone else remains consistent, that Hal Jordan is always boring, that Barry Allen is always kind of a dick, that Bruce is an uber dick, that fucking Ollie is the antithesis of Bruce. You know, like that these through lines can like just exist for long periods of fucking time. And the only person who has this rainbow spectrum of representation in terms of like who she is, how, like with the only thing not really changing is the baseline of her origin story, even though, you know, like the T's might be crossed a little bit higher or lower, or the I's might be dotted a little bit bigger or smaller. That like beyond those things, that the only thing that really doesn't change is her baseline origin story, and then beyond that, like as soon as she leaves the island, she's a different person every time.
Yeah, it's really hard to hold on to a character like that, and it also really I opened the episode with a little dig at the fact that Wonder Woman, by and large, doesn't really have an iconic rogues gallery to fight, and a hero from a literary perspective is only as good as the villains he's fight. I mean,
which was Joss's problem.
Mm-hmm. I mean, like would Superman be the legendary character if he didn't have Lex Luthor to be his, you know, shadow, as it were? Would, you know, Batman be Batman without the Joker? Even though, you know, Batman existed before the Joker. I mean, if we went by the actual history of the comics writing is concerned, but would he be this omnipresent staple of pop culture that he is? And I would argue no. But it is true that if you go through Wonder Woman's list of rogues, not only are they not as well known, some of them are just plain awful and just really, really indicative of the time they were of when they were written, like villains like Captain Nazi, for instance, or Dr. Poison, or Dr. Psycho, or Dr. Cyber. There were a lot of doctors she fought.
And then there's Cheetah, which, you know, like fucking super friends to Injustice. You really don't know who she is or much care. You know, like they're like it's true. Like Wonder Woman has one of the weakest ass fucking rose galleries in comics because, you know, like especially depending on her power set, you know, like she can fly, she can't fly, she has the invisible jet, she doesn't have the invisible jet. You know, like there's just these, you know, like there's this issue where, you know, the who does she fight? She fights Superman and Batman's guys. Usually.
usually, or at the very least, she fights. At the very least, she fights. You know, main Rogues Gallery for the extended DC universe. Your Mongols, your Dark Sides.
Yeah, like your every once in a while, Giganta shows up, and you're just like, really? But you know, like, because the Atom is nowhere around.
Captain Boomerang, she couldn't even fight Captain Boomerang? Come on.
So that, I think that's one of my bigger interests moving forward, is that, like, okay, so we proved that it was that it's very easy to tell a Wonder Woman origin story, because, I mean, the God of War is her first adversary, but where do we go from there? You know, like, because you look at, like, Batman, Superman in the animated universe, and, you know, like, they had Public Enemies, and they had Justice League War, and they had, they've done so much and had so much, but, you know, like, we got one good animated Wonder Woman film, and then it's like, well, kind of hard to go from there. You know, she served a very important purpose in a great many stories. I mean, this is the chick that fucking killed Max Lord. But, you know,
like, we don't talk about identity crisis here,
but, you know, like, where do we go from here? Because, I mean, like, we're instantly jumping into fucking Justice League after this, and that's great. And then we get the Batman, which, you know, like, good. I'm absolutely, you know, down for fucking Batfleck, but I'm really curious as to where do you go from here? Because Joss's big thing, and he made no secret about it, is that, you know, Joss writes from the big picture. And, you know, Buffy was big picture. Firefly, Angel, Dollhouse, they were all fucking big picture. Avengers, big picture. And you just ask that question that he himself asked and found trouble with. Because in the big picture, it was that, like, okay, Ares... And then what? You know, like, and you can make the argument that very well, that his complaining is what got him knocked out of that job in the first place. that it's just that her Rogues Gallery is so weak compared to exactly everyone else. Because, you know, like, the Flash has the Reverse Flash, has Zoom, has... like, even the Black Flash, plus Captain Boomerang, plus the Trickster, you know, like, he, like, even though his Rogues Gallery isn't super duper fucking strong, I mean, he's got some villains that have aged well over the years and benefited from new contemporary writing. I mean, like, you watch Arrowverse and you watch Wentworth Miller's portrayal as Captain Cold, and you can see that. Batman has the timeless Rogues Gallery that never gets fucking old, and it is just as good today as it's ever been. Superman, you know, like, his greatest enemies are always, you know, like, fucking Darkseid or other Kryptonians or Lex, you know, and, like, with Ollie, it's Malcolm Merlyn. It's like, just everybody's got, you know, like, these really definitive, really interesting villains to contend with and to challenge them. And, you know, like, it's not to say that Wonder Woman's gallery could not be beefed up. That, you know, like, you give me 200 minutes of movie and a wide berth of creativity, and that, you know, somewhere in her Rose gallery that something amazing couldn't happen.
I would wager that if they made a Wonder Woman sequel, they would probably find a way to put in Cersei. Because Cersei, to me, is the one... like, definitive Wonder Woman Rogues Gallery character that I think can work in this quote-unquote Snyderverse session. Because what Cersei is basically a sorceress. And a sorceress, we've had the Enchantress, so it's not going to really stretch the limits of believability. So it's like, well, if all the gods are dead, then how can, like, say, I don't know, like, Deimos could be still around? You know,
see that, like, or that, Medusa. That's the problem that all the other like mystical DC people all themselves have all the really good mystical villains all to themselves. Fucking Etrigan has Morgan Le Fay. Like, it's just that, you know, like, when we shook it out, it's just like Batman, Superman, Etrigan, Doc Fate. Like, it's just like, what's left for Wonder Woman? Fucking Dick.
Well, she'll always have Cersei, and I really, unhonestly believe that her, like. you could make a good Wonder Woman movie and have Cersei be the main threat.
You know what, though? Like, it just occurred to me. Maybe that's why it is God of War ran out of gas. Of all the reasons, like the bad gameplay decisions, the constantly increasing fucking armory, the camera that would not stay any less than half a mile away from Kratos as technology got better. Maybe really what it is that, you know, like after you kill the entirety of Olympus, there really isn't much left for the dude to do.
That's why we're going north.
That's why we're going north with a dude who's got a soulbound fucking axe.
I will. I'm still hyped for that game.
Oh, I'm totally hyped for that.
Oh God, you know, Dad of War, sign me up.
Like that, yeah. Like just to take that detour for a minute. Like when I saw the gameplay, because my first question was when you hear about like Norse, okay, that's interesting. And then they show you this dude who's got a fucking axe and it's not chained to him, and you're just like, what? And then he throws it, and it's just soul bound to him, so it just comes the fuck back like Mjolnir, and you're like. Good, dad, good. I like that, you know.
I'm still counting the days until it finally comes out. I have not been following the news very closely of E3. I don't know if it actually made a presence or not. I don't know if it did. I'm still checking in, making sure that, okay, so...
E3's just ramping up, so it's going to be all next week.
So the initial, I'm looking at the information right here. The initial release date is this coming November. So, hey.
I'm down for it.
I am too. If anything, because it finally puts Kratos as an actual character. Now he has an actual, like, reason to be human, trying to take care of his son.
Well, it's a different guy. Like, it's not Kratos. It's a different guy. But, like, in terms of, like, who it is that we're following around in the revenge story. I'll take it, you know, like I definitely did not bat an eyelash at it, like in a negative direction. I just kind of said like, okay, you know, cause what is it, like six God of War games, and you know, like beyond really solid gameplay that only got better as it got simpler on the PSP. It's like limitation is the mother of great gameplay sometimes. And you know, but I really do think that just like God of War, as it was, ran out of fucking gas. So, but it's not alone in having run out of gas. Like so many franchises run out of gas but overstay their fucking welcome. So and there is that question of like most recently posted, like should there be a Wonder Woman game? Fucking yes. Like that's not even a question. I mean, there is one part of the movie though, that made me laugh accidentally, which was that she ends up throwing her shield and nothing happens. Like it hits a dude and then it just falls, and I'm just snapped back to fucking Civil War with Spidey complaining about Captain America like that shield doesn't follow the rules of physics at all.
It's like, that's what happens when you try to throw a shield, Captain America.
Oh, it's just like that. It just made me, because I had just rewatched Civil War like a couple of days before, so when I watched that part of the sequence I just went
Yeah.
But should there be a Wonder Woman game? Like, fuck yeah, I'd play it. I mean, it doesn't have to be a movie tie-in game. It can be, not to say that all movie tie-in games are bad, because Chronicles of Riddick did perfectly well. Wanted Weapons of Fate was a fantastic 4.5 hours. That it absolutely could be done well. And some would even argue that some of the Spider-Man movie tie-in games were really, really great.
Spider-Man 2.
Yeah, like I don't think that there shouldn't be a Wonder Woman game. I think that you can farm a lot of perfectly good hack and slash action with, you know, like with a power set. Although there is one thing visually that did bother me in the film, which was the lasso.
Mm-hmm.
The CG for the lasso fucking sucked. It was so bad.
And also, I made this point in the Sage Versus, but I thought it worked to the film's favor in a certain way, how there wasn't really a great reveal of the Lasso of Truth. It's just like, it's the Lasso of Truth. We're not even going to have, like, a glory shot of it. We're not going to have, like, this unveiling of it.
No, it's just something that they have and that they use.
Mm-hmm.
And there's nothing really glorious or special about it. Although that scene was really great though. When Steve's fucking actively trying to resist it, and he just like, and he just like blurts it out like, "I'm a spy."
That was a great take.
That was awesome.
That was a great take in all ways. It was sincere, like you could feel his pain, but it also kind of tickles that little part of your brain where it's like, he's in pain because he kind of yelps like a girl.
Yeah, like I love that that take came out like that. But the actual animation for the lasso, I think, was just like really weird. And you know, like, and it might just be that, you know, like, I'm just too used to watching chains and shit, to watching like hell, like to watching like, I don't like, you know, that's just it though. In fucking Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D., fucking Robbie Reyes is killing it with the fucking chain, and their shit with the chain looks so good, and I just can't understand why it is that this lasso moves so strangely, in a way where I'm just like, okay, look, like, even if we treated it like the lasso itself was a sentient bola, but it just doesn't seem to have like a primary point of movement from, like, it's not necessarily moving from its tip, and it just kind of like arbitrarily moves along its length, like however and whenever it wants. And I just find that bothersome. You know, like, I'm perfectly on board with the idea that this lasso acts as a bola and has its own, you know, magical counterweight or what the fuck ever. But it was just something about the way that it moved that really fucking bothered me. But as a gameplay mechanic, it would work perfectly fine. You know, the bracers, they would work as a gameplay mechanic perfectly fine. The shield, the sword, they would all work perfectly fine. And I'd be down for that game. I really would. It doesn't have to be a movie tie-in game. It can just be Wonder Woman. But you know, like, it, like, and there's like, shit, man. Like, I would even take a Dynasty Warrior style game for a minute, for the 5 minutes. That would be fun. before that runs out of gas.
As I stated in one of my Q&As at Fanime, it was like, every Dynasty Warriors game is fun for exactly 10 minutes.
Yep.
And then you're like, oh, I experienced everything this game has to offer me, and then some.
Yeah, actually, I would take it. I would take a Dynasty Warriors Wonder Woman game for 10 whole minutes. But honestly, any Wonder Woman game, because, I mean, like, we've had plenty of great Batman games now. We've never had a great Superman game. But I really do think that, because you can't make a game out of the Flash. That would be boring.
No.
You can make a game out of the Green Arrow. That'd be interesting. You can make a game out of more than a few DC heroes, and I think that Wonder Woman is in that list.
Yeah, I can. I would agree with you for the most part. Although I wouldn't be so quick to throw Flash aside as being having a boring game. You would have to be creative with him, but I can definitely see at least some seeing the speed mechanic be used in to try to find a nice groove in gameplay. You know?
I can't. As a huge Flash fan, I just can't. I can't see there being an interesting Flash game, because your primary mechanic is speed. So it's just that he's running and punching shit. And then, you know, eventually it's a tornado, and then there'll be a mission where the weather wizard shows up and creates a fucking tornado, and you got to run backwards and go through this quick time event. And it's just, you know, and like, I can see that whole game in my head, and I would not find it very interesting. Like he works perfectly fine in Injustice, because it's just, you know, a fighting game. But as like one whole like actioner, like, the Flash just would not work as a game. And, you know, like, for the same reasons that Superman really wouldn't work as a game, because his power set really doesn't speak to, you know, like, fun gameplay mechanics. Like, okay, he can fly. Here's a flying mission. He punches shit. You know, but he doesn't have to try very hard. And then Metallo shows up, or fucking Lex shows up in the fucking armor, or what the fuck ever. Like, it's not overly interesting. But, I mean, you know, like with Ollie, you know, you can make Arkham Asylum out of Ollie, and that would be great.
Yeah. I mean, if you wanted to talk about like a Dynasty Warriors game, I would think a Superman game would just be the perfect excuse to have a Dynasty Warriors you know, just Superman just literally tearing through all the bad guys, and then all of a sudden Metallo and or a Bizarro Superman shows up, and all of a sudden, hey, it's a general. You have to actually pay attention and fight.
Well, see, at that point, it would be more like Dynasty Warriors Justice League, which I would be more for than just an exclusive Superman game.
Yeah, like a Justice League, game. It just, you know, like where one hero has to clean up some situation.
Like the same way they do it with Dynasty Warriors Gundam. Just like pick from, you know, anyone in the Justice League. Like you pick Mr. Terrific, you pick Ollie, you know, like three people go in and it's just, you know, like an infinite amount of fucking parademons, you know, like that sort of shit. Like that I'd be down for the 10 minutes. That'd be fun.
And then never play it again.
And then instantly go and trade it back in at GameStop. You know, like that's...
Well, if they managed to pair that up with an interesting Justice League story, I would think that the limited gameplay appeal would at least be stretched further. But with that,
yeah, it would just be the invasion of Apocalypse, which, you know, like that's as deep as it needs to get, and that's as far as it would need to go in order for it to work. But you know, like there would be something to be said about a Wonder Woman actioner game. If they started as the period film, you know, like her through World War One, and then, you know, just tried to come up with some missions of her in the more present day, I would be down for that game. I would absolutely be down for that game.
Mm-hmm. And I can't let any discussion about the Wonder Woman movie without giving all due praise for Robin Wright as General Antiope. And I have a tough time with Greek names, but she was actually, I think, kind of like the best part of the movie for me, at least from acting wise, because I will be the first to admit I'm kind of like a Robin Wright mark. I love her in, you know, Princess Bride. I loved her in she was easily the best part of House of Cards. And of course, she, you know, her as Jenny in Forrest Gump was, you know, another great performance. So to see her show up as not only the her mentor, Wonder Woman's mentor, but also be that, you know, like her guide, you know, like her one of her two most important people in her life as far as her moral compass is concerned, her and Steve Trevor, was a great addition to the movie.
Yeah, because I mean, like, she gets that look in her eye and it's just like she just went straight Lucy Lawless. That is awesome. Like the beach sequence is a fantastic sequence. Like I talk about the No Man's Land sequence, but just the hard foughtness of the beach sequence where it's like, no, Themyscirans aren't bulletproof. You know, like that was good for me. Because they really needed to establish that. It's like, no, they're not bulletproof. No, they're not insanely strong, that they're not all created equal. And that they have to fight to protect their home. Like, yeah. Like they have to fight modern weapons to protect their home. That was a fantastic sequence too. Like lesser to me than the No Man's Land sequence, just because it just kind of felt like the stakes were higher. But you know, like that whole beach sequence was fucking great.
That and is also it was a nice building block scene, not only to showcase how mortal the Amazons were, but also it was a nice use of Zack Snyder bullet time, literally, just to show like Wonder Woman also like kind of discovering what she can do without, you know, doing that whole Tobey Maguire whoa jumping over building and building.
Yeah it was like I think that the whole movie was pretty even-handed. Like the first, you know, like you spend this first quarter, you know, on what they explicitly called Paradise Island, which I thought was a good touch. And then, you know, like the last three quarters of the film you spend in this period war film. So, you know, there was like, I'm going to watch this film again. Like I have not watched Batman Superman again, have not watched Man of Steel again. I'll probably never fucking watch Suicide Squad. But you know, never say never, but, plenty of boring days, but with Wonder Woman, like whatever the special edition is, you know, like find me the nicest special edition that they can put out. I will, you know, save my pennies and get that version because I really enjoyed the film that much.
And I am wholeheartedly agreed with you. Just wish the ending could be a little bit cleaner. That's mine.
I didn't have an issue with it. I mean, that's a you versus me thing, but I personally didn't have an issue with it. Like, even if I did, it wouldn't have ruined the vast majority of the film or deterred me from buying it on DVD. And, you know, like, what the hopes of so many people are is that, like, okay, do you see now that you know, like, that female-led action films work, even though we have plenty of examples of that? You know, like just because we haven't had a superhero female-led action film doesn't mean that females haven't led action film. But, you know, like, we had, you know, the quest of Ellen Ripley to become Ripley in the first Alien film, which made her the absolute lead in the second film. You know, like, where they can't stop fucking playing trailers for Atomic Blonde. You know, like, it's perfectly fucking viable. And it always was. So, you know, and people are looking at Marvel like, so, no, you got Captain Marvel on the slate, but how about Kamala? You know, like, Kamala Khan deserves a shot, because that'd be interesting. And, you know, like, that, because she's the current Miss Marvel. So it's like, yeah, sure, why not? Like, or how about that Black Widow film? You know, like, could we please stop snubbing that? Even though I don't think I'd be as interested in a Black Widow film, just because I don't find Black Widow to be an overly interesting character overall. Like, it's a thing where it's like, just because she's there doesn't necessarily mean that it's worthy of a standalone film. But there are plenty of other superheroines that could hold up an entire fucking film. Would be very, very interesting. So, you know, like, I hope this does open the floodgates to the good, the bad, and the ugly. Where, you know, that whole quote from The Daily Show going around where it's like, we want the chance to not only make a bad woman-led superhero film, we want to be able to make as many bad women superhero films as there have been bad men. Led superhero films, because it's not like we're not spoiled for choice in that fucking arena. Spider-Man 3, Amazing Spider-Man 1 and 2, you know, it's like the ability to fail and keep chipping away at it until there's a success, you know, like, keep pumping money into things that don't necessarily, like, instantly make the bank that you think that it's going to make. It's that, you, like, some part of you still thinks that if you keep trying at it, it will sell. So now that we have this insane turnout for fucking Wonder Woman, let you know, just, like, cry havoc and unleash the movies of war. Like, let's fucking go. And I am all fucking down for it. Fucking She-Hulk movie or TV series, Marvel Knights, I don't give a shit. Let's do it, you know? Like, I'm fucking there for it.
Yeah, it's exciting to see, for once, DC beating Marvel to the punch about, like, what movies could be made and what can actually be released in theaters and not only turn a profit, but actually be met with enthusiastic approval. So, you know, is it no secret that just, you know, within a week after DC released Wonder Woman, Marvel dropped the Black Panther trailer?
Yeah, because they needed something, because that Homecoming trailer was collecting dust, and they don't have shit for Ragnarok in terms of a new trailer, because it's like, look, we can't do better than the Ragnarok trailer we put out. If we did, it would just look like us trying too hard. So here we go, Black Panther trailer. It's like, we can be progressive too! Look at all the black people!
Just kind of reminds me of that scene in UB40, you know, like, yo, I'm black, y'all! And I'm black, y'all!
I you know what? Like, what is it that I always say? The trailer's job is to get me to buy a ticket. That trailer got me to buy a ticket. I think it looks interesting. There are a lot of people that are like, that's Storm, right? Say it's Storm.
They can't say it's Storm, because Fox still owns her.
Yeah. So I don't know why the fuck people are up on that, but, you know, like, it looks interesting. The suit still looks good. I mean, like, the effects don't look entirely done yet for the suit, because the suit isn't a physical suit. The suit is entirely CG, which is fine, because it looked perfectly fine in Civil War, to the point where you didn't even know that it was CG until they fucking told you. Like, meanwhile, you know, fucking Bettany's in the fucking Vision suit. But they were like, no, we can't actually make the Panther suit, because it would kill a human being. It would be too hot. It's all fucking black. So
there's no ventilation, there's nothing. At least Batman has an open mouth for him to breathe through. there is nothing. There is no holes. There is no. There's not even any kind of crease.
Because it's a single piece suit. It's just one complete single piece seamless fucking suit. So it's like, yeah, we can get away with that with Spider-Man. Like, at least, you know, it's red. At least it has diffusing colors that bounce light. But black, no. Like, we would kill an actor instantly from heat stroke if we put an actor inside that suit.
Oh man, that is so. I feel so sorry for anyone who, like, any actor, you know, wants to be in a superhero movie because they make the big bonko bucks. But then I remember, like, stories from, like, George Clooney talking about how he had to literally be bolted into the Batman suit back in the Batman and Robin.
Yeah,
and how
or even more recently with Bettany, like, during the fucking airport sequence, they had him on a crane. And he's in the full vision gear, and he's just, like, sweating balls to the point where they drilled a hole in the bottom of the suit, and they described it as sweat poured out of this hole like a faucet.
Oh, sort of like what happened in Evil Dead 2, where Sam Raimi's brother had to be in that Bat Hag
suit. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And when there's that shot where Raimi's brother turned his head, and sweat literally like a leaky faucet comes out of her ear. You can still see it in the Blu-ray footage. It's that poor, poor man.
Yeah, so with the Black Panther suit, when they say, like, yeah, no, it's a fully CG suit, fine. It looks better than the Green Lantern suit. It's fine. Totally cool.
I mean, like, low bar and everything, but... And also, like, I made the same point I made to Joe when he was complaining about the Green Lantern suit being completely CG. And say, like, well, considering what he's doing, over half the shots that he's going to be in is him floating through midair as he's dodging bullets or escaping an explosion, which was going to be CG anyway.
Yeah, it's just that I think that the technology just wasn't there at the time, and the idea wasn't there at the time. Like the idea of, like, a bio suit, that the Green Lantern produces a biotech-type suit, like the Guyver, that might not have been the best idea. Like... I'm not saying that you need to do, like, a plane up and down fucking suit like it is in the comics, but honestly, you know, like, it was a combination of the idea not being quite right and the technology not quite being all there. And, you know, like, when they reattack it, because it's not a matter of if, it is a matter of when. So when they reattack it, I would hope that they go for, you know, like, if they're going to go with the CG suit, find a better fucking design. If you're not going to go with a CG suit or a hybridized CG, like with the fucking Iron Man suit, because pretty much all Stark ever wears, all fucking Downey's ever wearing these days is football pads. Because they tried full suit first movie and they went, nope, can't keep doing that. So, you know, like, just find a happy medium to find something that looks good, functions well, won't make an actor kill himself trying to actually be a physical actor in it. And I think that everything will be fine.
Well, I will say that after Wonder Woman, the future for these sorts of movies certainly looks brighter because of Wonder Woman's existence. And I think that's the best thing that can be said about the movie as a whole.
Yeah, absolutely. Like, I'm more interested now to see what's around the pike than before. Like, we are officially out of proof of concept. We are in the reality of, like, if you have the right director, the right fucking story, if you don't go through all the stupid fucking tittering tropes.
Steve, what effect?
Like, if you treat these characters with the respect that they have earned over years, then... And it can be said universally across all comic book characters, like men and women, but, you know, like men have gotten plenty of fucking shots. So, you know, like, if you treat these characters with the respect that they have earned over fucking years, in the sense of, like, they have existed in multiple pages, multiple standalones, multiple fucking one-shots, they're here and they're still here for a reason, then you can farm out a really, really good film.
You certainly can. Oh man, my throat is rasping at this point, just professing my fondness for this movie. I don't know about you, Mark, but I think it's high time that you do what you do best. Bring us on home.
Intro and outro music by Nick Vaughn. You can follow him on Twitter at the links below. You can now take Super Toolshed wherever you go. Just go to benthesage.com/supertoolshed. For Ben the Sage, I'm Mark the Engineer. Until next we beat, the shed is shut.